for your own safety.
You're not going crazy, Arthur. You're going sane in a crazy world.
Good news, everyone. I'm sending you on an extremely controversial mission.
Controversial?
Oh my, no.
You don't have a reflection.
Are you a vampire?
Am I a vampire?
It certainly is not every day that a man attains the exalted position of temporary honorary colonel. I thank you.
Welcome to Mr. Sledge's Neighborhood, the mostly weekly podcast by the Court of Nerds that brings news, reviews, and topics from the world of geekdom. The views expressed in this podcast are solely that of Kevin and not that of the Court of Nerds at large, and is meant for entertainment purposes only. Now your host for this misadventure, Mr. Sledge.
Welcome to episode 26 of Mr. Sledge's Neighborhood. I hope all your Thanksgivings were tolerable and you found something not to be disgruntled over. Now we enter the season of conspicuous consumption, or at least more than usual, and good old Sledge will have a buying guide out shortly for those in your life that get a piece of your disposable income. But not yet. Too much has happened and I've taken off too much time, so this week will be the normal format, or what constitutes normal for me. But first, a word from this week's sponsor, Jell-O Pudding Pops.
You know what's so cool about Jell-O Gelatin Pops? They taste just like Jell-O Gelatin.
I didn't know they made Benadryl-flavored pudding pops.
But they've got a handle. So, while your right hand is doing this, your left hand can be doing...
Putting roofies in a drink?
This or, you know. But if your left hand sees how much fun your right hand is having,
it'll testify against it in a sexual assault case?
It won't want to be left out. Okay, now you have to share. Jell-O Gelatin Pops. Real Jell-O Gelatin, only cooler.
And now, the news!
And I will buy whatever these guys put out in news. Forza Horizon developer Playground Games is shifting gears from racing for an upcoming project, and is hiring the people to bring it across the finish line. Yuck, yuck. Described as a, quote, open-world action RPG, and, quote, Playground Games mystery project will have developers and producers with previous experience on games like... Star Wars Battlefront 2, Metal Gear Solid, Phantom Pain, Grand Theft Auto 5, and Hellblade: Senua's Sacrifice. Whew. The new team will work on Playground's new second studio space in Leamington Spa, England, which can accommodate up to 200 employees, all of whom will be working on the developer's new project. Sean Eystone, who previously worked as senior producer at DICE and as development director for Phantom Pain, will act as production director for the open-world action RPG. Eystone joins Chief Design Engineer Will Kennedy and Principal Combat Designer Juan Fernandez de Simon, who worked as level designer for Grand Theft Auto V and senior designer on Hellblade, respectively, as some of the bigger names joining Playground's second studio. According to the previous comments by creative director Ralph Fulton, Playground's first studio will be working on Forza Horizon series, which is good news for fans like me who like excellent racing games. It's unclear, however, if Playground Games' open-world action RPG, like the Forza Horizon series, will be exclusive to Microsoft's platforms. Playground Games remains an independent studio, but Xbox has been hunting for exciting exclusives for some time, especially following the cancellation of Scalebound and, more recently, Crackdown 3's delay into 2018. Getting an exclusive RPG from a top-tier developer could be exactly the medicine Xbox needs right now.
Mr. Tuck? There's a problem with my car, I think.
Damn right. You need to swap out these fancy shocks for something a farmer would recognize, or you don't race.
Yes, Mr. Duck.
Yeah, the trouble with you kids these days is you try bending the rules before you learn the game.
And I'm stepping on John's movie news territory. A recent interview with Vanity Fair, James Cameron revealed that Kate Winslet is playing a member of the Reef People. Quote, She's very excited about it. She blazed through a couple of days of rehearsals and saw the world that we had created and how we do the work. She's very excited. She plays a character who's part of the Sea People, the Reef People. The one thing she did do is demand that she do all her own water work. I said, "All right, that's fine. We'll have to teach you how to freedive." End quote. In the same interview, Cameron admitted Avatar 4 and 5 aren't set in stone and will depend largely on how well the first two sequels perform theatrically. Quote, "Let's face it, if Avatar 2 and 3 don't make enough money, there's not going to be a 4 and 5. They're fully encapsulated stories in and among themselves. It builds across the five films to a greater kind of meta-narrative, but they're fully formed films in their own right, unlike, say, the Lord of the Rings trilogy, where you just had to sort of go, oh shit, well alright, I guess we better come back next year. Even though that worked, and everybody did." End quote. Oh, James Cameron. So, Kate Winslet is a sea elf. I'm not sure I can be turned on, but I mean, what was I saying?
The Sky People have sent us a message. That they can take whatever they want. And no one can stop them. But we will send them a message. You ride out as fast as the wind can carry you. You tell the other clans to come. You tell them Tarek Makto calls to them. You fly now. With me. My brothers. Sisters. And we will show the Sky People that they cannot take whatever they want. And that this is our land.
And didn't he just deserve to be banned and put in a timeout? News. The fight against people cheating on online games is getting ugly. Specifically, Epic Games is suing 14-year-old Caleb Rogers for allegedly modding the game and causing the developer to lose profits from his activity in a free-to-play battle royale mode for Fortnite. Rogers' mother filed a letter with the North Carolina's U.S. District Court saying that Epic, quote, has no capability of proving any form of modification, end quote, because her son merely installed cheats he downloaded from Addicted Cheats versus altering the game's source code himself. The cheats in question were apparently aimbots, similar to cheats Ubisoft has battled in The Division and Rainbow Six Siege, that cost between $5 and $15 per month, according to Kotaku. The lawsuit begins in October, but the age of one of Epic's targets has only recently come to light. There are a few other wrinkles to this as well. In the elder Rogers' response, she writes, quote, "Furthermore, Epic Games Inc. has released the defendant's name publicly, therefore allowing news articles and different online publications to obtain his name and turn release additional information. Referencing State Delaware House Bill Number 64, it is illegal to release underage individuals' personal information by any agencies," end quote. Well, yeah, no shit. This, along with the fact that the gaming juggernaut is suing a 14-year-old, strongly suggests that Epic had no idea who it was suing. Rogers' mom asserts the game's EULA states Fortnite should only be played by people who can enter, quote, legally binding contracts under applicable law, end quote, and failing that, needed to obtain consent from an adult. Yet there's no age drop-down or consent tick box on the form. She says her son never got her permission to play. Contract law generally prohibits entering into a business agreement with a minor, which would more or less make Epic's claim null and void. Torrent Freak notes that while younger Rogers didn't mod the source code himself, he did broadcast himself using the cheats on YouTube. Because what 14-year-old isn't on YouTube broadcasting? And he showed others where to download them and asked for donations from viewers. Epic pointed out that a video is key here and led to the lawsuit in the first place. How's that? Rogers apparently filed a DMCA counterclaim once YouTube took it down. An Epic spokesperson told Engadget the following, quote, This particular lawsuit arose as a result of the defendant filing a DMCA counterclaim to a takedown notice on YouTube video that exposed and promoted Fortnite Battle Royale cheats and exploits. Under these circumstances, the law requires that we file suit or drop the claim. Epic is not okay with ongoing cheating or copyright infringement from anyone at any age. As stated previously, we take cheating seriously, and we'll pursue all available options to make sure our games are fun, fair, and competitive for players. End quote. Meanwhile, Epic potentially faces litigation from PUBG Corp over the similarities between PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds and Fortnite's Battle Royale mode. You know, the game that came out first, and Fortnite's developer stole the idea from.
It's a crotch party right up in here.
Stop
Why
it.
Don't you lick on this big John?
Stop it, Dale. Stop it. Stop it.
That's cute. I remember when I had my first beer.
That's so funny. The last time I heard that, I laughed so hard I fell off my dinosaur.
And just one more before I hit the record button reviews. The beer I'm reviewing this week is part of the Island Hopper series that I reviewed last week. But it is so different, I felt it deserved a separate review. It also may be responsible for the loss of my side of the audio while recording Reverse Centaurs. That's a call forward. Blackfish is a black IPA from Thimble Island Brewing Company, and it is fantastic. I'm drinking one right now. This beer is brewed with a generous amount of midnight wheat, which gives it a porter-like appearance, but without the roasty bitterness. It uses Comet and Simcoe hops, which give it plenty of piney palate, but then a late in the brew, large amounts of large Southern Cross hops from New Zealand are added to bring the bitterness back up. This might be the most unique IPA I've ever had. The Beer Advocate rating is 3.81, well, which isn't bad, but low in my opinion. It has an APV of 8%, just like its Island Hopper brothers, and an ABU of 70, which is just about right. Drink this beer by the fire on a cold winter day after you just finished shoveling the driveway.
Oh, what is the malted liquor? What gets you drunker quicker? What comes in bottles or in cans?
Beer!
Can't get enough of it.
Beer!
How we really love it.
Beer!
Makes me think I'm a man.
Beer!
I could kiss and hug it.
Beer!
But I'd rather chug it.
Beer!
Got my belly out to here.
Beer!
I could not refuse a
beer.
I could really use a beer.
Beer! Beer!
Beer! Beer! Beer! Beer! Beer! Beer! Beer!
Oh, wheel of insanity. Turn, turn, turn. Tell me the lesson which I will... It says, the world is an awful place, so talk about something awful. Ah, fuck it. I guess I'm going to talk about net neutrality again, because less than a majority of American people elected an 80s villain into the highest office of the land, and he keeps appointing sycophants and toadies as regulators for important government positions, like FCC Chairman Ajit Pai, whose poor widow children are being harassed because he's a giant douche-mobile. That's right. He's a mobile douche. Not one you put over a baby's crib, but one who spreads his poisonous doublespeak ideology around with the proclivity of a snake oil salesman. Once again, we are on the verge of repealing net neutrality, because we can never learn from our mistakes. So I'm going to look at two things. First, the lies that the FCC chairman Ajit Pai told, and second, how the repeal of net neutrality will affect the nation's largest ISP, Comcast. The Federal Communications Commission put out a final proposal last week to end net neutrality. The proposal opens the door for the internet service providers to create fast and slow lanes, to block websites, and to prioritize their own content. This isn't speculation. It's all there in their text. But the new fact sheet sent out by the FCC today asks, what if facts are flexible things that we can bend to our preferred reality? It lists a series of myths about the commission's proposal, followed by facts that are supposedly there to debunk them, except the facts are often wrong or directly confirm the myth that they are trying to debunk. Here are some of the most flagrant examples. Let's start with this one. Myth. This will result in, quote, fast lanes and slow lanes, end quote, on the internet and will worsen consumers' online experience. Fact, restoring internet freedom will lead to better, faster, and cheaper broadband for consumers and give startups that need priority access, such as telehealth applications, the chance to offer new services to consumers, end quote. Note that the fact never states that the fast and slow lanes won't be created, and the new service it mentions is just fast and slow lanes for specific applications. If you read carefully, you'll notice the FCC isn't even trying to debunk the creation of fast and slow lanes. It's just trying to debunk that they will worsen consumers' online experience. That's a matter of opinion, and clearly we all know which side the FCC lands on. The commission also makes several similar admissions elsewhere in the fact sheet, where it ends up proving what it set out to debunk. This one's a bit longer, but it's among the most absurd parts of the list. Quote, myth. The internet service providers will block you from visiting websites you want to visit. Fact. Internet service providers didn't block websites before the Obama administration's heavy-handed 2015 internet regulations and won't after they are repealed. Any internet service provider would be required to publicly disclose this practice and would face fierce consumer backlash as well as scrutiny from the Federal Trade Commission, which they have renewed authority to police unfair, deceptive, and anti-competitive practices. End quote. Hold on while I stifle my laugh. The FCC is trying to repeal a rule that stops ISPs from blocking websites, so the commission absolutely can't guarantee internet providers won't do that when the rules are gone. But despite saying this, quote, won't, quote, happen, the answer goes on to say, okay, maybe ISPs will block sites, but hey, people will get mad about it. The FCC even acknowledges that the consumers have a strong preference for an open internet, which again, is the thing the FCC's proposal would stop protecting. The fact sheet also says repealing net neutrality will, quote, promote consumers' online privacy, end quote, when the reality is that the FCC passed stricter privacy rules than what consumers will receive without net neutrality. On a really technical level, the FCC is correct here. The commission's privacy rules were struck down by Congress earlier this year, so there aren't any privacy rules in place at the moment. But that happened, in part at least, thanks to the current FCC chairman's campaign against them. Had those rules been kept in place, consumers would have been covered by much stricter privacy protections than what the Federal Trade Commission will guarantee. That's because the FTC mostly has privacy guidelines, not strict rules, whereas the FCC was able to define specific behaviors that are unacceptable. Without net neutrality, privacy enforcement will go back to the FTC's broader approach. The FCC's big argument against net neutrality is that the policy is hurting investment in broadband networks, thus slowing the expansion of nationwide internet access. And if you only look at the numbers cable companies give you, that would appear to be true. The commission says, quote, broadband investment has fallen for 2 years in a row, the first time that's happened outside the recession on the internet era, end quote. But it's looking at the numbers provided by U.S. Telecom, a telecom lobbying group, and it's looking at them quite narrowly, too, only between 2009 and 2014 for comparison. If you take a broader view, it's clear that broadband investment has already been declining before net neutrality was put in place. Business Insider Steve Kovac asked Commission about that last week, and the senior FCC official declined to elaborate. The FCC doesn't provide any further detail here either. The stories that ISPs tell their investors is also very different from the stories they tell the FCC. And while there are been measurable dips in investment, it's partially due to things like acquisitions and oil prices, something that even telecom industry admits. I mean, when AT&T bought Dish Network, they weren't going to, start building fiber networks and stuff like that. You know, they had to build up Dish. And so, and AT&T makes a huge part of the internet service provider telecoms. Anyway. But the true absurdity on this list goes back to a question like this. Quote, myth. Broadband providers will charge you a premium if you want to reach certain online content. Fact. This doesn't happen before the Obama administration's 2015 heavy-handed internet regulations, and it won't happen after they are repealed, end quote. The simple fact is, internet providers will be able to do this once net neutrality rules are repealed, and the FCC is well aware of that. The commission simply can't make this statement while simultaneously removing the rule that prevents this type of behavior. What the commission is arguing here is that because something didn't happen in the past, it therefore won't happen in the future. But that's not how anything works. And there's a good argument to make that, because the FCC is explicitly giving ISPs the thumbs up on this stuff, it's more likely to happen than not. In fact, we're already starting to see this happen. AT&T and Verizon, among others, are running zero rating schemes that advantage their own content. As more and more consolidation happens, ISPs will be incentivized to go further, bundling content and providing free or faster data to make sure their own programs are the most viewed. That means consumers would end up paying a premium to escape from their walled garden. You know, walled gardens, I talked about that a lot in the past. Anyway, if the SEC really wanted to guarantee that ISPs won't charge tolls to access content, prioritize certain sites and services, and create fast and slow lanes, then it wouldn't repeal net neutrality. Instead, it's created a widely misleading fact sheet to tell Americans that it's all going to be okay. And that fact sheet is nothing but a bunch of lies. So, I said I was going to talk about Comcast, too. I have Xfinity. I use Xfinity. I'm actually rather happy with my service as opposed to the vast majority of Comcast consumers. Comcast is the most hated company in the United States. But anyway, for years, Comcast has been promising that it won't violate principles of net neutrality, regardless of whether the government imposes any net neutrality rules. That meant Comcast wouldn't block or throttle lawful internet traffic, and it wouldn't create fast lanes in order to collect tolls from web companies that want to priority access over the Comcast network. You know what? Comcast also promises that their technicians will show up between 1 and 5. This is one of the ways in which Comcast argued that the Federal Communications Commission should not reclassify broadband providers as common carriers, a designation that forced ISPs to treat customers fairly in other ways. The Title II common carrier classification that makes net neutrality rules enforceable isn't necessary because ISPs won't violate net neutrality principles anyway, Comcast and other ISPs have claimed. But with Republican Ajit Pai now in charge of the Federal Communications Commission, Comcast's stance has changed. While the company still sells it won't block or throttle internet content, bullshit, it has dropped its promise about not instituting paid prioritization. Instead, Comcast now vaguely says that it won't, quote, discriminate against lawful content, end quote, or impose, quote, anti-competitive paid prioritization, end quote. This change in wording suggests that Comcast may offer paid fast lanes to website or other online services, such as video streaming providers, after Pai's FCC eliminates the net neutrality rules next month, which is going to happen. It's 12 votes to 11, all falling around party lines. It's going to happen. With no FCC rule against paid fast lanes, it would be up to Comcast to decide whether any specific prioritization deal is anti-competitive. Quote, we do not and will not block, throttle, or discriminate against lawful content. We will continue to make sure that the policies are clear and transparent to consumers and will not change our commitment to these principles, end quote. So says Comcast as of November 22nd, 2017. Comcast is the largest home internet provider in the U.S. with more than 23.5 million residential internet subscribers. In May 2014, Comcast Senior Executive VP David Cohen wrote the following, quote, to be clear, Comcast has never offered paid prioritization. We are not offering it today, and we are not considering entering into any paid prioritization creating fast lane deals with content owners, end quote. 6 months later, Comcast made its promise again, saying, quote, we don't prioritize internet traffic or have paid fast lanes, and we have no plans to do so, end quote. Comcast said that it has agreed with then-President Obama's stance that there should be no paid prioritization. The circumstances in 2014 were different than they are today. Back then, the FCC clearly intended to impose at least some restrictions on paid prioritization, and ISPs were trying to avoid the Title II classification. Comcast has also agreed to some limitations on paid prioritization as conditions on its 2011 purchase of NBC Universal. But the NBC Universal conditions expire in September 2018, and Pi's proposal would undo Title II classification and get rid of net neutrality rules entirely. Both legally and politically, Comcast has now an opening to retreat at least partially from its net neutrality promises. Comcast's change in strategy was evident in July this year when Comcast urged the FCC to overturn the Title II order. Quote, "We do not and will not block, slow down, or discriminate against unlawful content," end quote, Comcast wrote at the time, omitting its previous promise to avoid paid prioritization. The FCC, Comcast said, would remove the Title II classification while still having, quote, "clearly defined net neutrality principles, no blocking, no throttling, no anti-competitive paid prioritization, and full transparency," end quote. As it turned out, Pi's final plan that will be voted on in December 14th doesn't even ban blocking or throttling. Comcast could thus pull back even further from its net neutrality promises, but as of last week, it was still promising that it wouldn't block or throttle lawful internet traffic. The cable lobby group NCTA similarly promised this year that its members will not, quote, "block, throttle, or otherwise impair your online activity," end quote, but it made no promise about paid prioritization. In 2014, NCTA said that, quote, "no ISPs offer, quote, paid prioritization." Just because they don't offer it doesn't mean it's not going to happen. Comcast's future in the fast lanes is all but set now. The remaining question is how Comcast paid fast lanes would be implemented. I don't really know. This is really hard to look at. Comcast promised not to, quote, "discriminate," end quote, suggests that its paid prioritization would be available to anyone who wants it and can afford it. Offering paid fast lanes to anyone at similar rates would help prevent the Federal Trade Commission from stepping in to block unfair trade practices. Comcast's July 2017 filing with the FCC offers some hints at how the ISP will implement paid prioritization. This is from their filing. Quote, "The commission should also bear in mind that more flexible approach to prioritization may be warranted and may be beneficial to the public. For example, a telepresence service tailored for the hearing impaired requires high-definition video that is sufficiently reliable quality and permits users to perceive subtle hand and finger motions in real time. And paid prioritization may have other compelling applications to telemedicine. Likewise, for autonomous vehicles that may require instantaneous data transmission, black letter prohibitions on paid prioritization may actually stifle innovation instead of encouraging it. Commercial arrangements that entail prioritizing such traffic could ensure that low latency levels needed to achieve the high level of data quality necessary for such services to thrive," end quote. You realize the government can subsidize these things, right? If it's for the public good, like medicine and for the disabled, of course you know that, but you want the money from consumers. You want to benefit, not the public. Listen, look at the highway system. The U.S. government subsidized it because it was for the public good. The fact that we don't drive on toll roads everywhere illustrates how successful it was. In fact, toll roads are having a profitability problem all across the country, and states that have sold out sections of their highways are dealing with some of these problems. Aren't they, Indiana? Anywho, Comcast stood by its 2014 statement in support of its rebuttal of presumption against the exclusive paid prioritization arrangements and arrangements that prioritize a broadband provider's own affiliated content vis-a-vis unaffiliated content. Though Comcast says paid prioritization would benefit telemedicine applications, the existing rules already allow ISPs to provide isolated network capacity for telemedicine, as well as previously written. VoIP phone offerings, heart monitors, and energy consumption sensors are also allowed under this exception for net neutrality rules. The net neutrality rules don't outlaw the use of content delivery networks, CDNs, that optimize delivery of internet content to the edge of ISP's network. Comcast itself debuted a CDN service in 2014 that places video content closer to customers' homes. But Pi's plan to eliminate the rules will let ISPs offer higher speeds over the network's so-called last mile that leads directly into consumers' homes and will offer the fast lanes to any type of online business. Proponents of net neutrality rules say this will harm companies that can't afford to pay tolls to Comcast and other ISPs. Quote, without these rules, internet service providers will be able to favor certain websites and e-businesses over others by putting the ones that they can pay in fast lanes and slowing down or even blocking others, end quote. Over 200 businesses and trade organizations wrote in a letter to Pi on Monday, quote, businesses may have to pay a toll just to reach consumers. This would put a small and medium-sized businesses at a disadvantage and prevent innovative new ones from even getting off the ground, end quote. Quote, this is just ridiculous. So, at the end of all of this, nobody is for this. The vast majority of American people don't want to scrap net neutrality. The vast majority of businesses don't want to scrap net neutrality. But the powerful telecoms, whose definition gets changed, they want net neutrality. And who has the money? Well, they do. And who's giving it to them? Well, we are. We don't really have a choice, though. Here where I am sitting in semi-rural Connecticut on top of a mountain, I only have one choice. I have Comcast. There are no DSL lines up here. There are no fiber networks. Google isn't putting their fiber lines near me anytime soon. I have to do Comcast. Now, it's a whole lot cheaper out here than it is back, you know, where I came from in the Midwest. And a lot of that is due to different laws and stuff that have been passed on the state level. But in the end, I'm kind of culpable for this. Because I'm not dropping my internet service because I have no choice. They are the only ones available. So I guess the solution is for what? To keep paying them? You know what? I guess that's what I have to do. And I hope that the people we elect put people in power that are sympathetic to the consumers and not to the giant telecommunications conglomerates.
Some of us must say, let's step back for a moment. Let's just pause just for a minute and think through the implications of our actions today so that this does not spiral out of control. As a member of the clergy so eloquently said, as we act, let us not become the evil that we deplore.
Well, shit, I ranted for far too long there, didn't I? And I crossed the half hour mark. Ah, well. Keep on the lookout for our sexy new D&D podcast, Reverse Centaurs. Trust me, you'll want to hear it. I'm Kevin from The Cord Nerd saying, if ignorance is bliss, why are there so many angry Americans? Bye!